cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Wedding Central. We are back, and I am back from Italy, and woo-hoo! I'm in studio. I feel a little bit more comfortable today. We are here today with Johan. I'm Carly de Villiers.
Ntombi Nhlapho.
Who is my host with me, and we've got Johan from GM Catering. Hello, Johan.
Good evening. Oh, good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon. It feels like evening here.
It feels like a long,
hell of a long day. It's always this season where we feel like the days are like 84 hours in a day.
We wish we had 84 hours in a day, to be honest with you.
It's like I have to sacrifice sleep or work.
Yeah.
What is sleep?
Yeah.
It's a dream.
So today we're going to be talking about catering and the important things to consider when it comes to choosing your catering styles. So Johan, just tell us a little bit about what you do.
All right. So we specialize in mobile catering. What it means basically is we travel around to different sites, different venues, and we basically build and set up kitchens in the middle of nowhere and try and provide food for anything up to 1,000 people if it needs be. Yeah.
We haven't actually mentioned your business name. We've said he does catering, What is your business name? Tell us a bit about how long the business has come about, why you've started GM Catering.
All right. Yeah, it's called GM Catering. It was started a few years ago. When I talk a few years ago, 6 years ago.
Okay.
We were three partners in the beginning, and it was sort of the initials, the first letters of each one's name. It came down to Johan, Esther and Michiel. Uh-huh. It's now just Johan and Esther. Okay. Esther sort of doing just a bit of the silent work on the side and a bit of the nice thing. But when we started the company, we sort of wanted to start something that's a bit different and a bit unique. And when we actually put the names down and we saw GEM, and we thought, you know, we actually want to create a GEM. Mm. So let's add a bit of a twist to it, and we called it GEM with a J, you know. And from the word go, we started to try and do the non-exclusive, but it's called GEM Exclusive Catering.
Right.
And it's not a case of expensive exclusive.
Yeah.
It is that we try and treat every guest, every client, every wedding as someone special, and try and design and specialize for something specific for them for their wedding to make it unique. You know?
Yes, 100%.
And that's where the exclusive came from, so that we, even the produce and everything we use, we try and do everything that's unique, anything that's nice, anything new, you know.
Something specifically catered for that particular client.
There we go.
And that's what you want.
And I think, Johan, from your side, a lot of people will, I mean, I've worked with you quite a bit, and you did my wedding. A lot of people look at, GEM Exclusive Catering is like this top end. And you do obviously do your very exclusive weddings, but you do fabulous weddings when it comes to the traditional weddings. I know the two of you are working on a traditional wedding this weekend.
Yeah.
But you do anything from a sit down casual lunch to an exclusive wedding, is that right?
Yeah, the big thing comes in, you know, in the beginning, I think when we started the company, we were very fortunate to have quite a few high end weddings on the cards when we started the company. And it sort of created a stigma of people thinking that we are too expensive.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it took us some time to get it out to the public to understand, you know, the exclusive side doesn't really mean that you're going to pay a lot of money.
Yes, not particularly
and
budget.
We basically sit with a client from a bridal shower all the way to, I want to say funerals, but we don't try and do funerals. You know? But we sit and we try and design the menu, not just to suit their style, but also to suit their budget, you know. So it's hard out there at the moment in South African economy, you know. And what we found is that you know, every bride still wants to have a special day. So provide it for them with the budget that they can work with, you know. So if they've got 120 rand a head budget, which is very little these days, but we'll try and make it work, you know. And you try and guide your clients according to their budget,
100%.
You know, so that they don't come with this expectations of all grandeur and then suddenly realize, but it's going to cost me 1,000 rand a head.
100%. And I'm glad you actually realized the economy because, you actually mentioned the economy because, I mean, if you go to, you know, Pick and Pay or Woolies now with 500 rand, what do you actually walk
out
with? Food is so darn expensive. But somehow people think that for a wedding, it's supposed to be cheaper for some reason.
Unfortunately, people think so.
So that expectation is, I'm sure, something you have to grapple with.
Let's go back now. If you're at the beginning stages of planning your wedding, let's look at caterers dedicated caterers to that particular client versus a cater, and let's reword it, sorry, external caterers versus venue caterers. Oh, Jan.
This is the side that I don't like the most. Anyway, okay. I think the difference between venue caterers and us is that I'm not stipulate or...
An external
caterer. I'm not forced to stick to the guidelines.
Right.
Where a lot of venues, and it's big corporates, it's a big event, it's a big venue, and it's all run down the line, and they've got a set menu that you choose A, B, or C, and they do small alterations. Mm. The difference, what we do is I try and sit with the bride and groom and say, what do you like?
Mm.
And then start building around that. So because I don't have a set thing of a kitchen that needs to provide, I can start building every function very unique on its own thing.
So everything has a personalized twist.
There we go.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I do find it's a huge struggle at venues where you have to come in and you have a client who's, you know, sometimes they've got the budget to go all out and create this entire experience for the guests or whatever, and they are not willing to budge on the set menu that they've had for 3, 4, 8 years. And that's what you have to take. And, you know, they've got a set where it's the same recipe. I mean, there's some venues where the food is the same. Like, I'm tired.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, fill it every Sunday. I mean, I feel sorry for the photographers who are there every Saturday.
Yeah, it's
Sunday.
Crazy. There's no change. There's no new flair, you know, with the menus.
Yeah, I don't want to step on venues' toes, but the thing comes in is, you know, I sit with a team of qualified chefs where a venue is very cost effective and they need to look at how to manage it good. So they've got a menu that the average cook on the street can cook and produce, because they do it every week and they do it good and they do it very nice and it's effective and it's brilliant.
Mm.
But they don't have the knowledge to take it to the next level because it's a cost thing. You know, if I look at chefs' pricing these days to employ proper chefs, they are expensive.
Mm. Yeah.
And so for us, the advantage is I work with a very small core staff group and we bring in the extra hands on a contract base, you know, whereas your venues can't sit with that. They need to have the – and that's also a big thing, you know. So I've got a free rein of designing a menu from a 10-course all the way to a spit braai, you know. Whereas the venue is just bound to almost what they have got in stock.
I mean, how many times, Ntombi, are you finding that your clients are saying, I want to do something different? And, I mean, the trends are that, I mean, it has been around for quite a while. But, I mean, here in Joburg, we're not able to offer that to clients in terms of having food stations and, you know, dessert
like
bars.
Like a build your own whatever bar, like a burger bar.
I mean, food is an experience.
Yes.
You know, it's just... It really, in terms of venues, they tend to limit clients. So, you know, take us through a couple that is maybe having maybe getting married on a farm. Take us through what type of experiences you've been able to give the guests attending the wedding just when it comes to the food side of things.
You know, farm weddings is actually quite nice because you sit with... normally your guests that arrive is so much more laid back, you know, and there you can start from open fires, you know, where you actually create the atmosphere with your food stations, you know. You can do a full-on bruschetta tapas bar where guests come in and it's the whole mingle and feed themselves and help themselves around a food setup, you know. And when we talk buffet on a farm, you know, you don't talk about the normal
stew and rice.
Yeah, rice plates.
But you can do that as well and make it an experience.
You have to, you know, because if you go to a real Afrikaans farm wedding, they want pompoen cookies with their caramel sauce and they want, you know, so, but it is how you present it and how you get the guest involved. You know, if you do a spit, why hide the spit? Let the guest 100% walk in and see the flames and see the meat, you know.
I mean, how many people when you see a spit, I mean, we experienced it a couple of weeks ago.
Me and Connie were standing
standing there and we're like, can we just cut some off? And then they've got the spit hidden away around the corner
and
when you want to see
it creates that atmosphere. And that's what I love about having a caterer on site. You know, I'm moving more towards I love doing weddings that aren't at venues simply because it allows my client to give more to the guest in terms of experience. I mean, you can already when there's a caterer on site, you can already smell the food from where you can already start saying I can't wait, it smells this or it looks like that.
We did a snack bar for a group of clients the other day, but we did steaks. So it was a whole display of raw cut meat in front of the guest. And they're like, oh, I want to try a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And it goes on the flames. He's got five different toppings from, you know, your Argentine chimichurri sauce. And there's everything that they want. Mm. And he takes a little bit and he walks off. And 10 minutes later, he comes back and he put something else on for me, the fire.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you want is that, you know, unfortunately, people are forced into tradition.
Yes.
And we are very traditional here. Coming back from this luxury this summit makes me realize how stuck in our ways we are in South Africa.
Not creative at all. It's like, at least Cape Town, there is a little bit of...
Yeah, I mean, venues in Cape Town have really given creative...
Yeah,
people the leeway
freedom,
to get and do creative things,
and
but
you
unfortunately
can go all
here
out,
we don't have.
Yeah.
You know, the only problem is the more creative you get, the bigger the budget.
Yeah,
yeah.
And unfortunately,
we have to be
not
realistic.
Everybody has
people
the budget.
Are bound to those budgets, you know, and you. It's not something we like to talk about, but when you have a budget, stick to your budget type of scenario.
That's all
because,
it is.
And that is the biggest problem that we have in South Africa. Once you start bringing food stations, you want to start bringing that, the amount of staff you need to assist on the wedding increases, you know. So
the skill level
has to get bigger, you know. And this is where, again, comes to venues. Where do you get the skill level suddenly to maintain that?
Yeah.
Whereas I think in Cape Town, your market is just so much more high end. 100%. And they're prepared to pay for the classy part. Call it classy, but for the nice experience. Mm. In Joburg, we're in such a rush. All right, let's go for the wedding. I want A, B, and C.
Right.
Let's go.
And then they just end up settling.
There we go.
I always say to my clients that, you know, you always need to treat a wedding almost like buying a car. You know, when you're buying a car, you know where your budget limits are. Yes, you dream of a Ferrari and a Lamborghini, but the truth is, you know that's not
But you
part
can buy
it.
A red car, a blue one, and that's where the thing comes in. You can put your personal touch
yes,
to the
100%,
car.
Yes, 100%. You can still customize it.
There we go.
100%.
So this is where I think it's good for us, is that I can sit with the bride and groom, and they say, Johan, listen, I want to do a spit braai, but... I want to add something to it. So we can add, because we're doing it off-site and I'm not bound to anything for a venue, I can really go and create anything crazy that I want to do for them.
100%. Here I am planning a wedding, starting from scratch. What would you say, other than things that we like as a couple to eat, what would you say are particular considerations I need to take into account when now planning a menu? Like, what typical questions would you ask to plan this now menu?
All right. The big thing is, and as much as we want to be creative, you also sit with a crowd of guests. You know, so if I have a couple that says, oh, we want to have duck, I say, guys, how many of your guests will actually eat duck?
Yeah.
You know, so unfortunately, and Carly was mentioning fillet.
It is the same option.
You know, as much as you want to have warthog as a main course, how many of your guests will eat warthog?
I know. You know, I mean, it's delicious, but I mean, at the
it's
end
like
of the
an
day,
A-line.
The minute
chicken or beef?
Yeah. and this is now where you have to go and you've got to take a fillet and you go, okay, how are we going to make this fillet to look different for the guest? Because unfortunately...
It's all about the presentation.
It's a presentation, but it's also your guest. You've got to, as much as you want to have a spectacular wedding, what is your guest going to eat? You
100%.
Know, are you going to have people walk out and go, want to go to a takeaway shop and eat something?
Yeah, 100%. And then what's your opinion on plated or buffet? What do you think is the better option, more especially for weddings?
Okay, weddings, I would definitely do... a plated main course, what you call our dessert bars, where you got your small stuff, you know, for guests to help themselves. Starter, you can either do either on a table as a nice presentation for sort of a family style on that yard.
Yeah.
But I would stick to plated purely as a presentation point of view, the elegance that goes with the plated. But then also, if you know your crowd, that is the big thing. You know, we're doing a traditional wedding. He knows his crowd, so I have to do a buffet because he says they're going to eat.
Yes.
So we've got to have the volume. And with a plated menu, it's not always volume.
Volume, yeah.
You know, it's more eloquent and more presentable. Where a buffet, once the first person is through a buffet is a buffet.
They're the people that are going to get the presentation.
I think a lot of people, especially the men, they tend to shy away from plated because they're worried they're going to still, their guests are still going to be hungry.
Yeah, but I'm Afrikaans.
I know, but not.
And I feed my guest as if I'm Afrikaans. You know, and that's the big thing, you know, and this is where people must understand is once you specify it to your caterer or your venue, and say, you know, let's make sure there's enough. You know, so if we do a fillet, I do about 220 gram to 250 grams of fillet per person. That's excluding all your other trimmings and stuff that goes with it. And that's a big fillet.
Yes, that is.
What if they're still hungry after that plated? What if somebody's still hungry?
If you design the menu right, they won't be hungry.
They shouldn't be.
You know, and this is the thing.
Because I think that's a big thing for couples. They just think, okay, yes, okay, have we actually designed our menu correctly? And what if our guests are still hungry?
Then you bring in a cheese table, or you bring late night snack or something.
Like little burry rolls and
mini gourmet pizzas or something like that where your guests suddenly can feed
still
themselves
snack,
again.
Yeah, 100%.
And this is where your dessert bars work nicely because now guests can come as they want to help themselves and pick and come back and pick again.
Yes,
you know, you build a nice big cheese table, but you do it whole, the classic French style. So there's lots of fresh breads and fruits and everything on the
and
cheese.
Spreads.
So they can sort of.
I shouldn't have come here hungry.
Yeah, there we go.
Problems.
But like we're talking now, this is what you need to do with the couple so that you can actually make them hungry when you actually design the menu.
Right.
So that they actually start thinking about the wedding.
Yes.
Because you need to have them thinking on what we're going to do on the day.
Yes.
So that you can design it.
100%. What about, and you know, I still find myself in 2016 having to educate some of my clients about insisting on canapes. For some people, they say, no, we can just do water and juice during that time. And I say, absolutely not.
I want to cringe.
Absolutely not. You have got to feed your guests. Yeah. You know, the minute your guests go hungry, you've lost the entire wedding.
Say,
they don't care.
Yeah, just keep your guests fed and watered and they will have a job.
I've got three things that I always say to couples. There's three items that's very important at a wedding. Food, booze, and music.
Mm.
If those three things work, you've got happy guests.
100%.
When your guests walk out happy, you had a good wedding.
Mm.
Guests don't see, as much as people love flowers and decor, they walk in and go, oh, it's beautiful. And they forgot because the first thing they can think of, what is next to eat?
Their stomach is rambling.
Yes.
And it's like, okay. 100%, 100%.
You know, when we say to couples, is you've got to always remember the plus one. And I always call them a plus one because a couple gets invited to a wedding. Normally one of them knows the couple and the other one is the plus one.
Yeah.
And he's probably had something on during the morning, so never had breakfast. Then suddenly his wife drags him to go to a wedding, so he never had lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks in, and now there's a beer. So by 6 o'clock,
he's
very tipsy.
Yeah, okay. You know?
And you end up with a drunk wedding instead of having guests that's enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
but again, it's the communication between how you handle your couple beforehand so that they actually decide to go for a canapé or a cheese table to start the you know, you don't need to do canapés, but you can do a cheese table to start the afternoon with.
100%.
So, you know, we're talking about designing your menu and it's all great feeling the taste buds and, you know, my juices are, the juices of my mouth is like, nah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that is what your couples experience when you start talking about a menu. Would you recommend that a couple do a tasting and do they experience a little bit of what their guests are going to experience on the night? Because really, a lot of the guests, a lot of brides don't actually experience any of their food.
Yeah. Brides don't eat at a wedding, so that's why we say come for a tasting.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big thing why we want to do tastings is because how I see food and how I cook could be completely different than what you see it, you know. So we can have the chat and we can discuss the menu and you go, oh, that sounds great. But in your mind, you've got a red sorbet on and I've got a green one. So when I put it down, you go, oh my God, this is not what I wanted.
Exactly.
You know, so that's where we say a tasting is very important. And for us, you know, we've been in the industry for a while. There's no airs and graces. You tell me if you don't like it and we change it. You know, I've got no ego to boost.
Yeah, you can't take it personally.
I think as couples, it's something that I can encourage so much. If you're not happy with something, or you're at a tasting, or you're at a mock-up with your florist,
speak up.
You have Don't be worried that you're going to offend them. Mm. I promise you, we've been through worse.
Yeah. And the thing is, we do it for a job. You know, if you think of yourself at work and your boss says this is wrong, please redo it. You're not going to like be all up in your feet. It's your job. This is what we do for a living.
You know, it drives me insane when somebody will say, oh, I love this. And, you know, when we do the table decor.
And then tomorrow
the email comes in and can we change this? You know what? We could have changed it then. And now we have to now sit and do another 8-9 hours of creating this beautiful table. And I'm sure with your food, it's a lot of time.
Exactly the same. You know, and this is why we try and force the guests to come to my kitchen site. We've got a small tasting room there. So that if you want to change, I've got the kitchen available at my back and we can quickly tweak and show you a few options. Mm. Whereas if I have to come to your house or to a venue to do a tasting, you're sort of bound to what you've packed, you know, and you sort of lay it out and it's normally cold because normally people are not on time these days in South Africa.
So Joburg, it's the traffic,
rain, let it rain. So we need some more, but not this weekend.
Not this weekend, please.
can come after 5.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, tasting is really important because it brings what we spoke about your first meeting and how we envision it on a table, you know, and then the couple can actually see, wow, okay, there's going to be enough.
Mm. I wanted to move over to African weddings.
Can I ask one more question when it comes to the tasting? What should a couple expect at a tasting? Like, does everybody have a full meal?
No. Yeah. So what we do is we give you a guideline of we're going to do 5 canapés at your wedding. We'll give you 2 or 3 to give you an idea on how it looks, what our way of serving it is and presentation, and we discuss all the other ones, you know, so it gives you an idea. Starter, normally we do, depending on how many guests come to the tasting, but we try not to go more than 6 people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's normally the bride and the groom and the 2 parents. Mm-hmm. Once there's too many people, there's too many opinions.
Yeah.
All right? And opinions don't work. So we'll do maybe 2 or 3 starters and then throw a separate starter in as a see what else we can do.
Yeah.
You know, sort of look at the day of the month and whatever so that we can design something more seasonal maybe. Mm. And then on main course as well, 2 or 3, so the guests can share and taste around it, you know. And same with dessert, maybe 2 or 3 just to give them an idea of what is out there.
But you shouldn't come to a tasting
and
expect a meal.
People think it's like, oh, we're going for lunch.
You know, some venues, we do know that. Right. Some venues will have an experience evening where the kitchen will then prepare a whole meal, but you're not the only one there. There's a number of other people getting married, and that's quite nice for them if they've chosen to go a venue option route.
That's a nice thing about a venue because they've got a set menu that they can sort of present, and you can go and choose A, B, or C, and you've got an idea. Mm. But for us, every wedding, every client is specific. Mm. You know, everything is unique, so
tailor made to that couple and their personality.
So we can't really go and say, "Come over, guys, we're doing it.
We're having the whole wedding."
The yellow lights. No, 100%.
Okay, now we could go to African weddings. Our favorite thing.
Okay. is there a huge difference in the approach to catering for an African wedding and catering for any other wedding?
Yes.
Okay, what is that?
Please tell me about this, because I mean, I've experienced a little bit of it in the last couple of weeks, but
there is a massive difference in the culture side because you know, traditional weddings, you know, how I see course of food and how you see it is completely different. So you've got to sit with the client. It's same as when you go to India, you know, you get a rogan josh from the northern part, from the southern part, each one is different, you know, so every mama has made her own mahal, and the way I'm going to make it's completely different.
Yeah.
So when we work with traditional weddings, we try and work very closely to what you can remember and how you would like it, you know, and that's where we sort of take a step back and say, all right, what do you want? Mm. How do you want it to taste? And we start building around it. Mm-hmm. And it's really also when you look at a traditional wedding, how much tradition do you want on the menu? Do you want the whole menu or just an element?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, especially in Johannesburg, a lot of traditions tend to die.
No. Unfortunately.
And Tombi, a lot.
African?
Yes, compared to when you had to go back home and get married in the village.
I don't particularly agree.
Or they don't understand what the traditions are until they start, the family starts implementing the traditions?
I don't necessarily agree. I think the traditions don't die, but the traditions are now more of a choice.
Okay.
So I don't think they have died.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they've died. I think, especially when you are going through the actual elements, there's some things that are no compromise or whatever, but there's some things that families will discuss and say, oh, but we don't have to.
Okay, yeah. So it's more of a choice. Maybe that's what I'm understanding. Yeah, that's what how I'm seeing it.
Sure. Sure.
Okay, and then do you if they had to slaughter, like Ntombi's getting married or
yes,
she's having her
yes
traditional wedding soon. We don't know when yet, eh?
Yes, yes, yes. I shan't tell the nation on the radio show when I'm getting married. It's not an open invite, I'm hoping. Please, Jesus, yeah, but
that is the one negative part of our traditional weddings.
How do you cater for the numbers? Simply because we don't, especially the traditional weddings,
you can't say no for any guest.
And the food is such a crucial part. Rather people don't sit down, but the minute somebody leaves without eating, it becomes such a huge hullabaloo.
Yeah.
How do you manage that part?
I think you need to then be very straightforward to your
caterer,
not your caterer, but also for me as a caterer to your client, so that they know if they're expecting 200 guests, how much more do you want to pay? Because I'm not going to just bring in food for in case, but as we're doing one this weekend, and I think we're catering for 100 extra guests. Just to play it safe. So in total, you're looking...
Yeah, it blows my mind. Hey?
I mean, we were very fortunate enough to do one of the deputy president's wedding. And it was said to us, you know, you've got to make sure there's enough food. Because if there's someone significant that wants to join, he's allowed to join.
Yes.
You can't turn him away.
Oh,
so that is in the communications, in the initial meetings. You've got to stipulate it so that you make sure that the client knows he has to pay for extra because I can't make a plan on the day. Because normally all traditional weddings is off-site. It's not at a venue or something.
It's at the home.
It's at a home. And you've got to make sure that there's enough food when you start. And we don't mind. You were asking about slaughtering.
Yes. What if you cook? Do you cook it? I'm going to be there for Ntombi's slaughtering. Yeah, I'm the first one there.
I'll be like, wait for my mlungu. She's just coming.
I can't give me a wait. I'm going to be like...
You might
have to get me
It's not as bad as you think. Yeah,
no, it's not
bad.
That bad.
Yeah.
The only problem
does
when
it scream?
You...
No.
It's not a
thriller movie or horror. It's not a bloodshed on the walls. It's not like that kind of a party.
All over your attire.
No. It's actually very clean and quick.
Cool. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, you know, that's the negative thing. A lot of places won't allow it.
Yeah.
You know, so if
but
you
it's
go,
part of a culture.
I know, but you can't sit and do that in an estate and then expect your neighbors to be happy about
right.
it. You
the
know,
so, coming
yeah,
coming right.
Yeah, you know,
right.
so.
Have you had that? I'm yet to in my life attend, and I've attended quite a few traditional weddings with slaughtering and stuff, and we've done it at estates, and we're yet to run into like SPCA or issues or whatever. Is it a real thing, or was it just like a joke?
Oh God,
that
we're
going to
get SPCA on our necks.
Which is fine. I've got 4 dogs, SPCA, relax. Just
no, I
relax.
I think it's really on how you communicate again to your neighbors, you know, so that the people, you know, everything in life's about communication.
Yeah.
You know, if you clear it with your neighbors, then it's all sorted.
Yeah.
The only problem we have with that is we don't know what the quality of meat is that we need to cook on the day, you know.
And this is true. It's, you know, I always say to my clients when there's something that's been slaughtered, I always say we have to hire a fridge on the day of slaughtering because I don't want the, because it sits out, right? Once it gets sorted, it gets chopped into pieces. And I always usually say, you know, my recommendation is for the family to take the bits that are necessary because there's certain parts of the animal that they need.
Why would you slaughter?
Okay,
why would you?
Let me finish.
Okay. I'm just so excited
it's
about
all
this.
Good. All good. So I always say, let the family take the bits and pieces that they need. Chop up the animal, because the first thing you need to do is actually hang the pieces so that the blood comes out.
Yeah.
But that needs to happen in a fridge because you have. I mean, imagine this heat wave.
Would you hire this like walk-in fridge?
You have to
hire it, and you have to have the hooks there. And that's the thing. Sometimes people hire a fridge without the hooks, and now how is that going to help?
And who hangs this thing up?
anyone can, and that's why the thing is you need to ask
the plan. I have to do it, eh?
No, I mean, my little self can never carry that much
big
meat
thing.
No, but you can direct the guys, and it literally is just a hook that they put in the piece of meat and then they hang it onto the rod. Yeah, and the blood needs. So the problem is that people might hire a fridge, not have the hooks, and now the meat is still going to be spoiled because there's nothing that's coming out of it or whatever the case is. So it's and I always say, when people do it, speak to your caterer, ask them what needs to happen to this meat after. I always also say, if they're not willing to do the fridge story, take the pieces that you need and send it to a butcher.
Yeah.
Get somebody to come and collect. Is that an arrangement that you usually...
You can do that, because for me to have those big chunks, you know, you're going to need to have a meat saw to
yes.
turn it into stewable
yes.
portions, you
yes.
know. So I would even go as small and say, listen, guys, I know you will normally do a cow... Do a goat or do something smaller
yes.
that your wastage on that part is not that big.
Mm.
And then you provide meat that's already been hung, already
yes.
been cut and portioned
100%.
For your stews and stuff.
Yeah, and you know, and sometimes it really is it's a matter of tradition where they say, no, it has to be a cow or whatever. And they'll say to me, oh, Ntumbi, we're gonna slaughter 4 cows. I'm like, no. The tradition calls for 1. Let's slaughter 1 and let's get the other 3 done by somebody, like in terms of the amounts of meat
yeah.
that you actually need. Because they say, okay, it's 1,000 people, whatever, let's slaughter 4 cows. Whoa. Let's do the 1 for the tradition.
You know, and if you think about it, it's sometimes more expensive to go and buy the 4 cows.
Mm.
You know, so buy the 1 and say to me, Johan,
sure.
let's make a stew. And
right.
and I'll get the tripe in for you
right.
and I'll get the
what does a cow cost?
It can cost anywhere from 10,000 to like...
To 20, 30,
yeah.
40.
And is it one of the cows that you would have been given in your labola process?
No, that's not it. No, that's just a separate cow. So depending on the tradition, sometimes...
And who pays for that?
The bride's family or whoever's actually slaughtering, because just this past weekend I did the ceremony where they were welcoming the bride, so I was I was doing stuff for the groom's family, but
okay.
even then we slaughtered a cow, so
okay.
It's essentially whoever's catering for that day
okay.
will have to pay for the livestock,
because you can have up to 3 different traditional weddings.
Yeah,
you know,
the
side
ceremonies.
The family side. So yeah, you know, I would say if you need to slaughter 1 and get it sent off to
a
and
butcher.
Get it yeah and get that meat turned into family packs that you can give to family members the
yeah.
next day as a gift,
okay.
and let your caterer
and that's
come
very
in
important
then with,
what he's mentioned because you know they always say, you know, when, especially if you have people that are coming from far from the wedding, they must go back home showing that they come from a wedding.
Yeah.
They need to have some meat and some cakes and
yeah.
some, you know, mkombo tea
yeah.
and, you know,
because
packs.
I mean, you've
to go
mentioned
home
before
with.
You know, like with African wedding catering, that you're always worried that somebody's going to be sick after the wedding and
yes, because I'm worried about the conditions, and maybe Johan can take us through this. People don't realize that, you know, food cannot sit out. And I'm always worried about, number one, cleanliness, because, you know, you have, especially when it's like the aunties from like the society and the moms and the whatever helping, they don't wear hair nets. They don't, you know, they keep everything open. There's flies. It's just, it's scary.
Oh my God.
Because I always say, if you walked into any restaurant and you saw the food sitting out like that,
you would
have a problem with it.
No.
And why are we supposed to accept
yeah.
it in that? What is your feeling about the prep and the site around where you need to work for a traditional wedding?
So if I do a traditional wedding like what we're doing now, 90% of the work gets done in my kitchen. And it comes through to the site. Because your site is normally, there's not enough fridge space. So we come in with fridge trailers and all of that to keep whatever's mm-hmm. cold. And you finish off the food when it's needed. So that you don't sit with food because your guests arrive 2 hours late.
Yeah.
That's sitting in this.
My people.
No, it's not just your people these days. I think it's a whole South African disease. Doesn't matter who you are. You know, so I honestly think, you know, if you do a traditional wedding, purely because we're in a society these days where a traditional wedding can have an array of different cultures of people coming to the traditional side of the wedding because people's friend circles have grown and everything has grown.
Colleagues,
so I would say, you know, if you do it, get a proper caterer, you know, to make sure your health and safety standards is done properly. You know, tripe is tripe, you know, you can cook it properly, but if you leave a tripe standing outside in the sun,
it's so
within
sensitive.
5 minutes, it's covered with flies.
But let's talk about that, like this health and safety thing. How can anybody just prepare food?
No,
I mean, that's just
not.
Something,
you
know.
You know, so we call it a COA, as a certificate of acceptability. As a venue or a caterer, you need to have that. where your premises gets inspected on.
But how does it get inspected? Where you're preparing your food.
See, and then the risk factor comes in when I travel off-site, you know. And that's why I say you try not to do too much on the site so that your food can stay...
The quality.
And doesn't get contaminated.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. You know, another issue that I have... Oh, sorry, Dol. Another thing that I always say with African weddings and why I always insist that let's go with a professional caterer. They know how to handle any crisis that comes up with traditional weddings. The problem with traditional weddings is we can only plan, and we all know in the industry, you can only plan so much. The rest, we're going to just have to play it by ear on the day. I don't care who says what. We just have to make sure we've got... Now you have the mamas and the aunties and so forth cooking, and stuff happens, and now there's nobody that can assist with any crisis or anything that comes up. Certain things that I'm speaking about maybe in particular is... Number one, the amount of buffet stations and setting up a buffet station and serving. What are things that somebody needs to consider in terms of, I've got this African wedding now, other than the food, what else can I expect when I'm working with a professional caterer that I might not have thought of if I got my mom or my family to cook for us?
You know, when we set up this a traditional thing, I try and split the buffets up into three different areas. So you've got one which has got your sort of your starches and your pap and your guinyas and all of that, where the slower guys can come and can pick it. Then you've got your meat section where the madalas can walk and he can grab a piece of chicken and he can go stand in the corner and nibble. So he's not blocking the road. And you've got to have to make sure that your whole buffet is accessible from all sides, you know. And unfortunately, you know, you sort of also bound to what your space is. But normally to try and have a buffet station per 100, 150 guests, you know, if you got 300... dual sides, split it up so that some of the older ladies can come and get a salad and a bread roll first and then come back again. And you've got to try and space it so that guests can help themselves, you know, and not have these enormous queues running to keep them...
100%, you know, because that's going to affect your guest experience. What about, which is my... Look, I'm even getting goosebumps because it makes me so angry. Waiters, staff to assist at a traditional wedding. I mean, you know, the general consensus, let me not generalize too much, but a lot of the times you have clients who have an African wedding who refuse to pay for staff. They are just anti the movement and they say, my young cousins will do it.
We had an experience a couple of weeks ago and it literally the caterer had... I think it was her family, all her kids coming to help.
Or her kids or her kids'
just setting
friends.
Up the food. And
we're talking about people that are like 60 kids.
And they were the setup staff for the buffet station and the clearing staff.
We don't work with anybody unless they're a professional staffing company. Or
but why people. Is that important?
At the end of the day, it is people that I work with. It's people that I can trust. It's people that I know. If everybody comes and say, oh, I've got an auntie that will do the dishes. 400 plates
how much
is a different ball game
altogether.
You know?
And you know, the truth of the matter is, as much as you say, yes, I've got an auntie that can do the plates, I can guarantee you on the day of the wedding,
she'll be joining in the party.
Is doing the plates. No. Nobody.
And I mean, it's also, it comes down to most of the times you've hired every piece of cutlery, every piece of crockery, your glasses. You cannot, you know,
hire
the waiters spooning all the knives and forks into the bin. If they're not professional, they're going to do that.
Yeah. You know, for us, it's very important. You know, I've got a whole list of cleaners that comes through because everybody will say, oh, no, I've got friends that will clean. No, they can't clean.
They're lying.
You know, for 500 people, you're looking at 1,500 glasses to start with, and every person used a glass about 8 times. So,
this is true. Like
it's 4,000 glasses that needs to be washed on the night.
And I promise you, there's nobody that's willing to do it. Nobody is going to wash. I don't care.
No, because they're going to join the party at the end of the
day. They're also attending the wedding. Yeah. There's no family member that wants to be involved in the mechanic. They'll all commit. I promise you, they'll say, yes, we'll do it. But come the wedding and the singing starts, that's it.
You know, it's hard for us to even control our contract staff because they feel they want to join in the party. Never mind to control a cousin or an auntie, you know. So,
and I mean, there is a lot of waste that goes on after a wedding. I mean, I'll never forget the day after our wedding where we got married on a field, and the next day you think, oh my God, who's going to remove all this rubbish? And it was tons and tons of rubbish. We ended up having to last minute get somebody, a refuse removal company, to come and clean. And you don't understand until the end, like how many bottles and all the smells and.
You know, if you think about it, you know, just look at, let's work on a round figure. So it's 100 guests, and each person has 3 drinks. So 3 bottles of beer. So it's 300 bottles. You know, it's a lot of bottles.
It's a lot.
You know, then suddenly you start adding all the other kitchen scrap and the rubbish from the bars and the papers and all of that. You need a skip.
Yeah, you need a skip.
You know, if you've got a venue, a different story because they've got it. It's all worked in. You know, it's just a system that goes. But once you go to a off-site, aunties and cousins and nephews and nieces.
And the last thing they want to be doing is cleaning up the next day.
Also, it makes it hard for us, you know, the people that are working the front, because how are you going to put pressure on family? You can't say, listen, man, hurry up. We need to get this out. Yeah. Look, if they want to listen to a speech till the end, they are going to listen to the end.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And then my last thing that I wanted to ask is about temperature control and buffet regulations. Again, you know, with, I don't know if it's general because a lot of my clientele is African, but a lot of the times we say lunch is going to be served at 2, but lunch is served 1 hour, 2 hours. How long can something actually sit? Because sometimes I always struggle to explain to my clients that for me to be ready, number one, I'm going to need time to set up the buffet. But once the food is on there, I really do just want to start serving, because the food cannot sit on a buffet because it goes off. It goes bad. You can't
serve it. We work on about 1.5 hours for a buffet maximum and then I clear. And that is the problem, you know. So we will try.
Obviously with lids on and everything.
If we do a traditional wedding, we will not... We will not put food out until you let me know we are ready to eat. Because once we've put it in the bain marie, the temperature drops, you know, because the bain marie can only keep it at a certain temperature you know. And, you know, I will rather add little to the buffet as the guest gets more and more than to sit with a big waste.
Yeah, 100%.
And I mean, I've heard a lot. Oh my gosh. Like couples will say, there's so much food left over. Can't we take it home?
No takeaways.
Why?
Purely because Now what happens is, up until that point, I have controlled the food in all aspects. Now you forget it's in your car. You go join the wedding. It's outside. It's hot. It's in a packet on your back seat. Now you go to the after party. Tomorrow morning, your kid comes and goes, oh, what's this? He opens up and he starts eating it and he's sick. Who gets blamed? I do. So
that applies to anybody even at venues. They say, but there was so much food left over. Can't we have it in takeaways?
I give it to charity because I can control. So once I get back to my kitchens, I see what is usable, what is not usable. That I can still use, I use that and get it ready for a charity. We either turn the stews and the veggies combined into a soup and freeze it and off we go. We can give it to a charity and at least feed an extra amount of people with leftovers. We don't take the risk.
No, I completely understand.
And it's a huge risk.
It's a huge risk. It's the same, and people don't understand what risk. And if you get sick, you can literally get very ill. You can literally almost die from eating food that's gone wrong.
The problem comes in, you know, people immediately also going to turn around and say, oh, it's the caterer. And then I sit with the reputation of making people sick. And meanwhile, it was not on the day. It was the next day that the person ate it. But they're going to look at the food and say, well, it come from you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why we're very strict on that. You know, if there's a cupcake left or something like that, I say, take it. Because once it's dry. No kid will eat it. He wants the juicy one. But if there's a bit of stew or chicken that's been left, someone will eat it.
And if
it's been hot and outside, it's not going to be good.
100%. My next question is, do you ever struggle, especially with African families, do you ever struggle with the whole thing of who buys the groceries? Why I ask, sometimes people insist, the family will say, right, it's fine, Dombi, we'll go with your caterer, wonderful, wonderful, we want to buy the groceries, or whatever the case is.
That must be the hardest thing for you to let go, if you even do let go.
No, we don't let go.
But why is it important? And I'm for the not letting go.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
And you know everything is bought last minute as well.
Yeah, and also, you know, people leave it for last. You're going to run out of money, and then you said to him, 400 people, you buy stuff for 200 people, but he must still somehow
suck it out. No. Yeah.
And you know?
That's one of the main reasons why we don't let go. And that, you know, even if people say, oh, my uncle's got a sheep farm and he'll provide me with two lambs, I'm going to, no, thank you. Mm. I will bring my own lambs. Mm. I know my butcher. Yeah. I know where I get it. I know what weight I need. Mm. You know? Mm. They go, yeah, it's a 20 kilogram lamb. Yes, but 20 kilograms lamb. Take it off the bone. It's only 10 kilos, you know. Yeah. So,
you know, I've after the wedding that we had a couple of weeks ago, I've put it in my contract that we will not do your wedding if you have not got a caterer that we know what their standard is. Because the thing is, at the end of the day, the people are not seeing the caterer in the background. 100%. I, as the planner, am standing there and people have not been fed.
Yeah.
And it's my brand at the end of the day. And it looks terrible on the guests, but you're fielding all the complaints.
And you have people that have sat there for 4 or 5 hours and now you can't feed them. And I mean, you just say,
I'm sorry.
You know? Yeah.
What can I do? And then you say, oh, well, I didn't cook the food. Well, and it just, you don't want to play the blame game either.
We did a traditional wedding about a year ago, and we were asked to do the canapés and starter and the dessert, but one of the family friends will do the main course. And it was at a venue, and we sort of, the venue agreed to it, and we came in, we did the starter, we did the canapés, and we stood around. Eventually, my team had to get involved, because half an hour before main course, the fish was still frozen in the boxes.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and that's the problem we have. My team work on a specific time order, and there's proper time management, and things are prepared before we arrive so that we can finish off at your wedding.
Yes, 100%.
Whereas, you know, a lot of these aunties has done it for 50 people maybe.
100%.
And there's no time frame, there's no pressure on making it work. Mm. But if you've got bands and everybody and you've got a timeline to keep, you've got to have someone that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, and you know, black people don't kill me. My issue is that also, you know, with the mamas and the aunties and stuff, they are so used to being late that they are under no pressure to change
it. It's the norm.
As much as you try and you know, you run as close to on time as you possibly can, if the food's not ready, there's nothing I can do. We have to wait for the food. And because they're so used to it, they just say, no, man, they'll eat when they eat. And it's so, and those are parts, you know, and I agree with you. I've put it also in my contract for traditional weddings. I'm not budging not being, with the caterer, and I'm not budging with the waiters.
It's really not you being a difficult person. It's just we have seen it all. We have experienced
We know better. We know, you know, it's better.
And we don't want you to waste money, your guests to be unhappy, and it to be a bad experience. You've got to trust us because we've been through it all before.
You know, the other thing is also, you know, when I go do shopping, we do bulk shopping. Mm. So I'll probably get it at a better price than what you're going to get 100%. It at Pick
and Pay. Yes.
So, you know, let me do it. Mm. You know, as I'm saying, this wedding we're doing on the weekend, there's about a kilogram of meat per person because I know you need to have enough. So, yes, I'm taking a risk of making too much food, but I'm sitting with a function where I know they can have more than enough.
People,
and that's what you want to do. You know, you want the guest, even if I do tripe or maguinhos or whatever, I want people to walk around and go, damn, Gem Catering has done a bloody good job. You know, and that's what you still want to get to. You know, it doesn't matter if it's traditional or Indian or Western, whatever your wedding style is, you want guests to walk away and go, damn, I want to try them. Next time when I've got something, I'm going to try them.
Yeah, 100%.
And I mean, it is. The food is such an important part of a wedding. And, you know,
it can make or break it.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what it looks like, what's gone on. If they were hungry, they will remember that day in and day out for the rest of their lives. 100%. Oh, I was hungry on that wedding.
Yeah.
Johan, thank you so much for joining us. And Tommy, is there anything else you want to ask? I mean, there's so much we can talk about. Oh, my gosh.
It's just something I'm so passionate about. Yeah. And I feel like people focus a lot on decor, you know, even as a planner, I would rather skimp on the decor and make sure that the food is enough and tastes good and, you know, the experience of the food. What would your words of advice, this is somebody who's planning by themselves, they don't have a planner or whatever, if you could meet them today and give them advice about planning their wedding, maybe particularly about the food, what would you say to them?
You know, as I said earlier, you know, guests walk into a venue and they go, it's beautiful. But they forget it immediately because then the function starts. Mm. Make sure that your guests are fed from canapés, from arrival, all the way through, make sure there's enough food.
People remember the way you made them feel.
That's it. You know, when you remember your gran and you walk into the house, you could smell cookies, you could smell ginger beer. That reminds me, fresh baked bread. Bring people's memories back with a wedding, you know. If your family is, I'm going to go Afrikaans, bring an element in that people go, damn, I haven't had this for a while. If you had a traditional wedding, bring something in that people go, oh, you know, I can't believe it. A caterer did this, but this is, and this is what you need to do is, you know, you've got to, it's like I say, when you do dessert, make it very sweet because dessert is about indulgent. It's not about just, oh, I want a low-fat creme brulee. No, damn it. You want a creme brulee.
You want to add some extra boundaries on your hips.
But that's what
it's open the button of your pants.
There we go. And for me, that's what a wedding is all about, is to actually stir a bit with emotions and feelings so that you walk out and go, oh, this was good.
Yeah.
You know? You told me it looks like you're going to cry.
No, it's such a great thing.
I know.
Like, I've never thought of food evoking emotions.
It is.
And when he mentions things like fresh baked bread and cookies, it is. You know, when you remember,
I mean,
when
we do dessert tables, and, you know, normally dessert smells like nothing. But when you add cinnamon candles and you do some star anise in bowls next to it and coffee beans, people walk to the dessert table and go, oh, it smells good.
Yummy.
Yum, yum. Yeah.
Even if the desserts are not smelling, but you create the aroma and you awaken the senses.
You see, he's even advised me.
There we go.
Yeah, no.
You told me I'm hungry now. No, I'm
so
hungry.
Girl, after here I must go and eat.
There's some takeaways down the road. Yeah.
So
what everybody always do.
Oh, but Johan,
thank you so much. Yeah.
No,
so
it's a pleasure,
awesome.
Ladies.
Our tummies are rumbling now.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming to chat to us.
Yeah.
And we hope you've enjoyed this podcast. And thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Keep up with the conversation on social media. Give us a hashtag Wedding Central and we'll find you. Engage with us on our Facebook page as well as our Instagram. We look forward to next time. CliffCentral.com.